Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Writer's Way, a Right Attitude radio show. This program is brought to you by the Office of Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative that enhances student learning by fostering positive attitudes towards writing. I am your host, Melvina Sykes. This week on our show, we're going to hear from Mr. Jason Etheridge and Dr. Desmond Delp, two inspiring individuals who in fall 2016 sat down and spoke with us here on the campus of Savannah State University. We'll hear Etheridge and Delp discuss their strategies for writing and giving tips for staying motivated throughout the writing process. First up, we have Jason Etheridge. Etheridge is a motivational speaker who goes by the name Mr. E, the Motivator. You listeners can't see this, of course, because, you know, radio. But there are two exclamation points in there, one after the moniker and another after the title, Mr. E, the Motivator. Hearing this man talk, you kind of get why those exclamation points are there. Etheridge is a motivational speaker, activist, and author, and he is very motivational and motivated. It's like his enthusiasm bled through his demeanor into other areas of his being, like his name and his title, Mr. E, exclamation point, the Motivator, exclamation point. Fun fact, the exclamation point has been around since way back in the 16th century, and ever since then, it's been punctuating commands, showing excitement or emphasis, and hanging out with interjections. But we here at the QEP think that whole time, it's just been waiting for Mr. E, the Motivator, to give it meaning and purpose. Mr. E, the Motivator, holds a bachelor's in business management and a master's in professional school counseling. He is the author of the book 101 Days of Empowerment. Savannah State University student and QEP intern LaKrista Nelson brings us this interview.
Welcome, Jason. Thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My first question would have to be, who or what encouraged you to become a motivational speaker?
With motivational speaking, I believe it was something that I know now that it was kind of given to me. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I got a chance to meet my mentor, Mr. Keith Brown, who was also a graduate of Savannah State early on. Mm-hmm. And I kind of stole him as my mentor. And he has kind of helped me and guided me in making this into something that is worthwhile. And so leading by his example, I've been able to create my own lane. And it's been successful so far, but he was a big motivating force, along with the support of my family and my children, and making sure that this grows.
So motivational speaking is a gift.
It's a gift for me. For me, it is a gift as well as a business. But I have a lot of passion about what I do, and so when I'm in front of people, I'm able to inspire them. It's just flowing out. No preparation needed.
So where would you say that your passion and inspiration comes from?
Well, it's God-given. And so I'm passionate about understanding why I'm here. Mm-hmm. And knowing that's the initial drive. And then when I get an opportunity to share it and make it real for someone else, it makes it even more special. So it's a really spiritual awakening being Mr. E, the Motivator.
Most people tend to forget that motivational speakers are also humans who also still have emotions.
Yes,
because
indeed.
When you're in front of a crowd, everyone sees the happy, peppy side of you. But what does Mr. E, the Motivator, tell himself when he's feeling down?
Well, and it happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said in the presentation earlier, I'm a one-man show. Mm-hmm. And so everything, if I'm going to be successful, it depends on me. If it's not going to do well, it all depends on me. Everything that happens, whether it's from emails to booking gigs to actual performing to the preparation, where I miss a step, that's where the success depends. Now, with that said, I'm going to have a lot of down times, right? Because that's a lot of a burden to bear. But I'm always confident in the fact that what I'm doing has a purpose. My purpose is to inspire the lives of young people or their parents or their teachers. And once I revert back to that foundation, it makes everything, all the little things that I'm down about just begins to dissipate. And so I just go back to my foundation, go back to my purpose for being a speaker, and then we go on from there.
So your audiences range from elementary students to high school students to adults.
Yes.
So how do you prepare yourself to speak in front of different audiences, and how do you shake the nerves?
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think that's the good thing about my brand of speaking is that I'm relatable to, you know, second grade and third grade as well as I am to college kids and adults. But preparing for them, I think it's a matter of knowing the audience and having an understanding of, you know, elementary kids, you got them for 5 minutes. If you can talk for 5 minutes, but if they're not moving, if they're not engaged, after that 5 minutes, you're going to start losing them. And so I make sure in those presentations that there's some movement, there's some engagement, you know, at certain points. It's a little different when you're in high school. High school kids, they want to be entertained. So they want to sit down, they want to watch what you're going to do. And so, you know, you can throw in some jokes because they understand, you know, verbal jokes a little bit better. You do some engaging things to kind of pique their interest. So it's just a matter of doing that. But the preparation, the biggest part of preparation aside from putting the actual spiel together, is understanding how the audience is going to react. And that's what gives me the most butterflies, because every audience is different, every single one. Mm-hmm. You can go from middle school one, the kids will be still, they will be quiet, they'll watch you, they'll clap when it's time, and they'll sit down. Mm-hmm. And then you go to another school, another elementary school, same age kids, same group, and you know, they're all over the place. And you just don't know where this is going to be, or you know, you can't stereotype. You can't say if I go in this neighborhood, they're going to act like this. No, because then you can have good kids right. in a bad neighborhood, and bad kids in a good neighborhood. So, or what we would describe as good neighborhood. But that's how I do it. So, with getting prepared for them is knowing the audience, being confident in what I can bring, and making sure that the focus is not on what I'm doing, but it's on my personality and how my personality engages the young people.
Do you write your own speeches before you speak to an audience?
Many of my speeches, they're the same. I have a testing presentation, I have a bullying presentation, I have, you know, a couple presentations for parents, I have one for professional development for teachers, and they're pretty standard. And so when I bring that service to a school, they already know what to expect. So it's already written and laid out, and that's the good part, because now that cuts some preparation and gives me more time to do, you know, more marketing things and more things with the school. But when it comes to something that I don't do a lot, like say a graduation or a or baccalaureate, that's something that I have to write. And so that process, you know, has me going into, you know, doing research and, you know, looking at different things that I wanted to try, or different messages that I want the people or whoever the audience is to go away with, and then I create the presentation around that.
Okay, so you are a motivational speaker, which is just basically a public speaker.
Yeah.
What is the importance of writing in public speaking?
Absolutely, it's everything. Okay. Everything about what I do has some type of writing. Now, when you say the word writing, I'm sorry, many people automatically think papers, essays, books, things like that. But it also includes your bio, your web, your email, communication, business letters, invoices, contracts, all of that. And all of those things also come into a large part of what you do as a speaker. Now, I'm a speaker, you're thinking, yeah, well, he writes speeches. Of course, yes, I do write speeches. But I have to connect with the school, I have to persuade them to hire me, I have to persuade them to pay me a certain amount, I have to give them certain documents so that they can be legal and done in the professional way. And all of those things and getting the opportunity to speak take a whole lot of writing, because I'm not sitting across from somebody. Most of my communication is done through email, so grammar has to be right, the tone, the voice has to be right. And if it's not, that could kill a deal. And so writing is extremely important to not just the execution of what I do, but in also the preparation.
So with writing, not only do you write for your motivational speeches, but you also write, you create motivational songs for students.
That's right.
Because music plays a role in your life, because you were in marching band in high, In college, excuse me.
High school too.
Oh, high school and college. Okay. So it's been part of your life for a while.
Yes.
What gave you the idea to create motivational songs for students?
Yeah. I was working at a school, at an elementary school, and my principal brought me to his office. He said, I want you to hear something. And it was a song with some kids, and they were doing a little CRCT song. And I said, I could do something like that. I think it was different. You couldn't understand what the kids were saying. They were kind of yelling. I said, I had an idea to do something like that. So I went home, I made the song, it was the T.I., one of the T.I. songs, and I brought it back to him, he loved it, he floored it, and I made sure that it had a certain format. I didn't want it to be too long, I didn't want it to be too wordy, I wanted to have, you know, like a call and response or something that the kids can repeat. And so once I put those things into the song, and made it maybe 2 minutes, two and a half minutes, it became a product in the song. And so so I had that format, and then you start looking at, well, what do kids need to hear? You know, do your best, you know, go to sleep on time, concentrate on what you're doing, don't look around, you know, you just and throw those in. And that's how it got started. So he loved it, played around the school, all the kids loved it. They're going around and chanting the song. He shared it with some other schools, they're doing it. The next year, I went to a different school district, made the songs again, and I was at a middle school this time. The middle school kids are loving it. Mm-hmm. My media specialist, he got the songs, and then he sent them to every media specialist in the state of Georgia.
Wow.
And so now I'm getting emails back saying, you know, can you come perform? Can you come and speak? Now, all I've done is just made some songs. I don't know anything about, you know, speaking anything. But I said, sure. And so I figured, well, if I'm going to go and, you know, sing a song or two, I need to have something to say. And so that's when we started, you know, putting together, you know, what the show would look like. That's when I met Keith Brown and kind of started studying what he, how he put his shows together. I had conversations with him. And over time, it just grew. You know, it was one school, then it was five schools, then eight schools, then 20 schools, and then schools from other states. And all that practice got me an opportunity to do it more and be more comfortable with it. And then we stretched out into parents and stretched out into teachers. Mm-hmm. And here we are today at Savannah State University.
And I'm sure for younger audiences, hearing a song that's catchy,
that's right,
will stick with them longer.
Yeah.
And they help them remember your speech.
That's right. And it's not anything, because I can't sell the music because I'm using songs that are already popular.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but at the same time, I don't want to sell it. I want to give it to teachers to use in their classroom. Mm-hmm. That's the whole purpose. So I make it, have fun with it. And there's a lot of educators that do it. I use that as a hook so that they can bring me into their schools and I can really show what I can really do. So it's a fun tool. But music has been a part of my life forever. It's a part of my wife. It's a part of my wife's life. It's a part of my children's lives. And I use it to inspire people, and I'm glad it's been a part of my life so I can do it.
That's cool. Although writing is not one of your favorite activities.
I hate it.
You are the author of the book 101 Days of Empowerment.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on what someone can expect from reading it?
Yes. 101 Days of Empowerment, it works in several ways. It can work as a 101 day challenge to yourself to develop skills and empower yourself on things like hope, resourcefulness, and hearing quotes from some famous people, just to stay inspired. It could be something that you can just open up to any page and just be, if you're just curious and just need a quick inspirational word, you can get that from the book. You can use it as conversation starters in your classrooms if you're an educator. You can use it as classroom guidance if you're a counselor. So there's several different ways that you can use the book, but its general purpose is to help people work hard so that they can better themselves. That's what it's about, and I think that's what the whole calling for being Mr. Either Motivator is about. I want to help people want to help themselves. And 101 Days, just like the music, just like the presentations, is another opportunity for that I have the pleasure of allowing people to take advantage of.
So would you say that influenced you to become an author?
Yes. As I'm growing, I'm noticing that, you know, speakers have these books But everybody has these long, mm-hmm. 400 or 500 page books. I don't read like that. Mm-hmm. And so I say, well, what if I did a quote book? I think quote books are really cool. You know, this it can be compact, it can be easy to read, it can be something that you can pull up at any time, and that's where the idea came from. It so. Doing that book, it's another arm of the business, but it also helps because it's so easy to read and people are buying them a lot now, so I'm really proud of it.
You have a 15-year career experience working in elementary, middle, and high school levels.
Yes.
So what is the importance of writing in the field of education?
In education, communication is key. Mm-hmm. If your communication has to be clear, it has to be concise, and it has to be within the law. So if you are saying things if you're sharing information that shouldn't be shared, it's gonna really cost you a license. It's gonna cost you a teaching license or put it in jeopardy at least. But when with writing in education, I like working through email. Because it gives you a paper trail, you know what time, you know what exactly what was said. You mm-hmm. can't like talk around it with phone conversations. It's he say, she say. You know, somebody can say I said something and it won't be the same as what I exactly said. But I love working through email. All the documentations with RTI and college applications and transcripts and all mm-hmm. these different paperwork, and especially in special ed when you get to that point. It's important that it has to be clear, it has to be correct, and it has to be within the law. So. I won't just say writing. I'm stuttering all this. I won't just say writing, but I'll say communication as a whole has to be 100% clear in education because it's everything.
So, as an educator, in what ways do you think writing can have a positive effect on students in their future careers? Mm.
Well, when you begin with the end in mind, and you look at people that are attempting to earn their doctorate. The only thing they do is read and write mm-hmm. all the time. And they write a lot of art. They do articles. They write their doctoral piece, and then they have to defend it. And so that's reading, writing, and speaking. So if you roll that back to master's and to your bachelor's degree, and even into high school, if you start building those foundational skills at those levels, by the time you get to that doctoral point, it won't be as gruesome a process as it is for a lot of people. So when you're in school and you can see that that's the case, the practice of writing becomes that much more important. It becomes that much more necessary because once you get older and once you get further in your educational career, it's going to be needed more so than, you know, math and science.
So do you put yourself in a specific mindset when you write? Like, do you have to sit down and focus, or do you have to get yourself up moving?
Yeah.
What mindset do you have to put yourself in before you start writing?
It depends. Okay. You know, I'm most creative, you know, I'm taking a shower or I'm driving in the car. Mm-hmm. So if I get an idea in the car, you know, I'll pull out a phone, pull up my Evernote, and I'll type a few notes in Evernote. If I find that, say I'm watching television or something and I'm not doing anything, I may pull up my iPad and type something there. If I'm in my office and I want to just sit down and focus, I'll do that too. So it just kind of depends, and just learn to be flexible with it. Technology has helped us be more flexible in how we write. So I use that to my advantage because I'm not a sit still type of person. I'm kinesthetic. I move all around, as you saw in the videos we showed. I'm always moving, so that helps me out a lot, so that I can have a central point where the writing pieces are, and work on them whenever I can.
I assume that being a motivational speaker can sometimes be a struggle because some of your audience members, no matter what you say to them, they can still be unmotivated. Mm-hmm. So. For a student, what would you tell us to a student who is so unmotivated to fulfill their full potential in a workplace or a classroom?
Yeah. Get off your behind. Yeah, dramatic pause on purpose. No, but the main thing is if you want to do something, mm-hmm. you'll find the time to do it. Right. If you don't want to do it, you'll find an excuse. Mm-hmm. And that's the bottom line. And if you are unmotivated to be successful, that's a choice that you're making. Mm-hmm. you're going to have to own that choice at some point. And so that's not the most happy thing. It's not the most. It may not be the most motivating thing, but that's how I motivate myself. Now, again, I'm a positive person, but when it's time for me to get in gear and get moving, I say, look, it's up to me. If I don't do it, it won't get done. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that's shared. Now, when I present, I'm a little more creative. I'm a little more pleasant with it. But at the end of the day, the bottom line is get up off your tail and let's get to work. And what I offer is, I won't let you be alone mm-hmm. when you're doing it. You can call me, you can email me, we can talk about it if you have feelings, but you have to do it. It's not going to be easy, it's not going to be fun, but it will make the fun more worth it. But step one, you got to get up,
right.
And you got to get started. And so that's how I do it.
Because it essentially starts with someone within themselves.
That's it, absolutely.
So here at the QEP, our goal is to encourage students to have a positive attitude towards yes. writing. So what tips would you give to a student to help improve their writing or to encourage them to improve their writing skills?
Absolutely. Let me say first that I hate writing.
Mm-hmm.
The process,
that's clear.
The process of writing is nerve-wracking to me, but writing helped me become a better reader.
Mm-hmm.
It helped me enjoy reading longer passages, mm-hmm. Whether it's longer articles or articles with more complicated words. Writing helped me get through those a little bit better. With writing, once you finish one piece, then the more writing that you do becomes not so gruesome, mm-hmm. right? The third thing is that when you write, And you own it, you can own the process of writing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make it your own. There's no set way in how to write. You don't have to sit at a table. You don't have to sit in front of a computer. You can be in your car. You can be on the couch. And you can still get your work done. And last but not least, the ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you put down on paper is yours 100%. Unless you go on somebody else, hit a copy and paste. Which don't do, that's illegal. But when you have put in the work, the hard work that it takes to actually write and find the words that can be relatable to somebody that's reading it, it's 100% yours. And that feeling of fulfillment is one of the great feelings that you'll have, especially as a scholar, mm-hmm. as a student, and as someone who's trying to become better.
It has been a pleasure interviewing you today.
The pleasure was mine, believe me.
What final thoughts would you like to leave with us today?
For everybody that's watching this, Savannah State, what a great university. You guys have opened your arms and doors and given me a platform to work with your young people. I really do appreciate it. Even though I attended Alabama A&M University, please don't hold that against me. I thank you for having me, and this has definitely been a pleasure. But what I want to encourage everyone that's watching this today is everything that you do is dependent on you. I want to make sure that every student at Savannah State University is not just a student, that you are a graduate, that you are getting out of here in 4 years, 5 years, however long it takes, but you graduate from this school and you take what you learn here to the rest of the world, because the world is a huge place. And it needs your expertise, it needs your energy, and it needs your Savannah State spirit. And so I want to leave that with everybody here. Thank you so much again.
Thank you for joining me today.
I'm Dr. Lisa Yount, the director of the Right Attitude Program at Savannah State University. Here's the writing tip of the day.
Hello, this is a writing tip from the Savannah State Writing Center. Diction or word choice is important in academic writing. For instance, you may write that the results of an experiment were unexpected, whereas in more informal situations, you may simply say it was weird. Remember that the written language is typically more formal and structured than spoken word.
The Right Attitude Writing Tip of the Day is brought to you by the SSU Writing Center and the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative to enhance student learning by improving attitudes about writing. Visit the SSU Writing Center in Payne Hall to get assistance with your writing projects, and to learn more about how you can improve your writing attitudes and skills, visit qep.savannahstate.edu.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Writer's Way, a Right Attitude radio show. I'm your host, Melvina Sykes. In today's episode, we're talking to writers and motivators about how to write in order to motivate and how to motivate in order to write. So when we sit down to write a story, there's kind of a checklist we try to always follow if we want the story to turn out good. These are the sort of things to do first before anything else happens. One of those things is that we want to tailor the story for a specific audience. We want to have in mind a certain type of person we're trying to reach, and we want that type of person to know we're trying to reach him or her. Another thing is, we want to make sure the story is rooted to a specific place. With that, we know we've got to drop enough details about the place that a person who's never been there will be able to imagine it, while a person who's actually from there will instantly recognize it. When it comes to hitting those 2 points, maybe nobody we know does it better than the author of the children's book, I Love My SSU, Dr. Desmond Delk. Currently, Dr. Delk teaches in the School of Education and Behavioral Science at Langston University. He stopped by Savannah State campus in October 2016 and took the opportunity to speak to our QEP student outreach coordinator, Kiara Lewis.
Mr. Delk, you know, can you share how you became interested in writing a children's book?
So it was specifically about Savannah State. I mentioned this several times always, but, you know, it wasn't like a, you know, mythical experience how I kind of wrote this book. I was simply, I'm a graduate of Morehouse College, and I was at homecoming one day, and this guy named Earl Cooper, he had a children's book about Morehouse. At first, I was kind of reluctant about buying it during homecoming. I ended up buying the book, and I just, you know, for the purposes of using it for, you know, giving the book to my nieces or nephews. I eventually took the book home, brought it back to Savannah with me, and then one day I looked in the back of the book and there was a list of all these books produced by Mascot Books, and none of the schools listed were historically black colleges or universities. So a light bulb went off and I said, hey, I should do this for Savannah State University, and gotcha. And I just hit the ground running from there.
Gotcha. Sounds good. Putting HBCUs on the map.
Trying.
So what impact or influence do you hope your book has?
We want to plant the seed of education in Savannah right. State, historical black colleges, and the lives of children from kindergarten on up, from, you know, from the crib, actually. So you want to have that conversation about college, you know, while children are still children, as opposed to high school or middle school when, you know, the stakes are a little bit higher. So right. We instill that value of college and that concept about college at a young age. They will be more inclined to, you know, expand their choices, but they would also know about, you know, Savannah State specifically and HBCUs in general.
Okay. So can you describe the process that you use for authoring the book?
It was simple. The storyline is similar to a lot of the mascot books where their particular mascot for our purposes, Tiger, he's on the way to the homecoming game at Savannah State. So the purpose of the book is to get children acclimated with the campus through the different images, and we also have SSU fun facts where students learn about the university, like historical aspects, current aspects, and in the back of the book they also ask questions about you know, their goals and aspirations. Okay. So writing the book was real easy, and it was based upon a lot between the images that Morgan developed and also a script I thought of prior to writing the book. So it's kind of, we worked together to come up with the script.
Good. So Mr. Delk, what role, you know, did thinking about the visual imagery play when writing this text?
I guess the purpose was to just give the reader an experience of what Savannah State's homecoming would look like. So that's kind of really what guided me from what I expected from Morgan and what Morgan tried to make sense of my script. So I'm not sure how well of a guide that I gave him, but I think the goal which we set for the book, it came out. You know, as I look back, I mean, the illustrations were, you know, they're perfect. They're pristine. But for me, as far as the script, I mean, if I could go back and change a few things, I would. But the imagery, I mean, what you see is what you get, man. Mm. And it kind of like, it definitely play that experience of Savannah State's homecoming, I believe.
So, what advice would you give to aspiring authors?
you know, sometimes you just gotta write sometimes. Whatever, mm-hmm. like you have to have maybe a notepad or just have a pen with you. If you have a pen with you, it's always something to write on. If you have a note, and then you obviously got your phone, so you can check your phones out. You know, make notations of an idea that you have. I do that sometimes. And, you know, we can always give advice. You know, sometimes we may or may not use it as effectively as we preach. However, I definitely write down those ideas that you have. I moved recently. I saw like little scraps of paper where I wrote different aspects of I love my SSU. Okay. I say, hey, you know, Tiger is doing this and the student said this or whatever. But I definitely, you just write and don't be afraid to allow somebody to critique your work. And I think that's one issue that a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. One, it's a combination of, I feel like my project is finished and I really don't want to go back and edit it. And then again, my product is finished and I really don't want anybody to say anything bad about it. Mm-hmm. So you don't really want to work on it anymore, but you don't want anybody to say anything negative about your work. Right. So what's that happy medium? And sometimes you just got to step out and let somebody say, hey, this is not good. Or would you consider this? Would you consider that? And let's start over to the drawing board. Nobody likes to start over.
No.
And I remember in kindergarten. I mean, not kindergarten, but I remember in fifth grade, the teacher was about to, you know, edit my paper. I said, hey, can you do this in pencil? So I wouldn't have to even write the paper, write the whole paragraphs over and over again. So writing was not something, you know, even looking back all the way to kindergarten, you know, most things, math and everything, I have E at E's on it. And, you know, satisfactory would be like in the writing component because I was just kind of lazy with it a little bit. Okay. It wasn't like my biggest area of interest. So really looking from the beginning of college or even when I started Savannah State, if this was something that I would have ever done, never. I never dreamed about or even aspired to do this children's book. But it's something just like timing, opportunity, mm-hmm. and most importantly, you know, it just being persistent. Right. So if you say you set forth, say you're going to do something, just going to do it. So that's one thing I do too. So I try to finish things that I'm going to do. And this has definitely been one of those things because, I mean, you know, there have been times when me and Morgan was kind of working on it and the deadline wasn't going to hit when I thought the deadline was going to hit. Well, when I first initially desired for it to, the book to be published. And then through the process, you know, Morgan trying to balance school and everything, sometimes the illustrations kind of slowed down. Right. And the level of productivity I thought, you know, it should have been done. And so sometimes I was considering, you know, maybe we just kind of try it again later. But we persist through it all.
Sounds good. Sounds great. So I know we talked a lot about the writing process. So let's go more so into the publishing. So could you just talk about the process of getting the book published?
So I guess I'm technically a self-publisher. You know, I did self-publishing or whatnot. However, the company that I work with will be more so like a hybrid company where they supported you a lot, where they retrieved the ISBN numbers, where they did a lot of the license from Savannah State Athletics, where they, you know, submitted all the information to Amazon and iTunes and all that good stuff to get the book sold that way. But really, so you got two different ways. You got the traditional route where you see a lot of most big time people do, where you get paid up front to produce a particular book on their particular timeline. But then with the self-publishing, you kind of take a risk. You fund. You know, you fund the whole project. You do most of your marketing for the project, unless you pay them a little bit more, pay somebody to do it. And it's a big risk as well. But, you know, for me, I like this book is one to build relationships. And I think that's pretty cool about it, because I'm going to homecomings, book signings, and book readings at, you know, elementary schools, and it gives me a way to make connections with people. So that's what I like about it, really. And like, for the book to sell, it's going to really require me to make interactions with people. My sales at Amazon or through Mascot Books, you know, they pale in comparison to, you know, the book sale with the signings that I do, you know, at my local library back at home in Atlanta or at homecoming in Savannah State. So it's something that you got to keep funding. You have to support yourself. You got to support it both financially and just like, I mean, and then, you know, you have like Instagram and Facebook and all those different tools that you can use for your charge. So,
right.
Doing all right.
So do you think you learned any lessons when it came to self-publishing or any recommendations that you have for it?
I didn't do a great job at really compiling. I didn't do good record keeping about, you know, book sales, anything like that. So that's the main thing. I didn't do good records. I mean, record keeping. You know, in the age of like social media, just keep the timeline moving. So find some way to promote your book. Okay. You know, one thing I do, I literally, anytime I go to a new small town or city I'm driving, I may stop and just put the book there. So I always keep the book on you. That's one thing. So I put the book on the little towns, the sign, say, welcome to Savannah, or well, Savannah's pretty big, but welcome to like some place like Villarica or Toccoa, Georgia. Shout out to my grandma. you put your picture there, you take a picture and you put it on the timeline, and anytime, and or if you have other people that you know, have them take a picture, you know, have them take pictures of it. But really just promote. I understand that's gonna be you have to make a financial sacrifice, but also find ways to keep the book relevant. So this book is 3 years, and so it's been out for 3 years, and I'm you know, I recently moved to Oklahoma, so I'm going to have to try to expand the book out there somehow. Mm-hmm. So it's really just making a connection with this local schools. So, you know, we know R.L. Stein, but I've never seen R.L. Stein. Well, I saw R.L. Stein in real life recently, but during elementary school, never.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. I'm Dr. Lisa Yaunt, the director of the Right Attitude Program at Savannah State University. Here's the writing tip of the day.
Hello, my name is LaShante Grant. I'm a student writing fellow tutor at the Writing Center, and I'm here to give you one last tip for writing. Pre-writing is the first stage of the writing process. It's the point at which we discover and explore our initial ideas about a subject. It helps us to get our ideas on paper, though not usually in an organized form. Some pre-writing techniques include free writing, outlining, and using graphic organizers. So find which one works best for you.
The Right Attitude Writing Tip of the Day is brought to you by the SSU Writing Center and the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative to enhance student learning by improving attitudes about writing. Visit the SSU Writing Center in Payne Hall to get assistance with your writing projects, and to learn more about how you can improve your writing attitudes and skills, visit qep.savannahstate.edu.
We're back, and you're listening to The Writer's Way, a Right Attitude radio show. We've been hearing from Dr. Desmond Delk, author of the children's book, I Love My SSU. The book is all about fostering Savannah State pride and getting kids pumped for homecoming. Before he went on to his current appointment at Langston, Dr. Delk was a lecturer at Savannah State, which, of course, was where he got the idea for the book. But he also set up a scholarship for Savannah State students, and he funds it with proceeds from the book. An awesome, kind, and extremely charitable gesture. Thinking about that, when we were putting this show together, one of the guys who does production help for us was listening to the cast recording of the musical Hamilton. His two daughters are all caught up in the Hamilton zeitgeist. Anyway, that musical is all about how this plucky revolutionary hero literally writes his way into history. From the moment we meet this guy, Alexander Hamilton, he's using writing to get himself where he wants to be. The subtle implications from that show are the same as Dr. Delk's gracious double gesture of educating kids about our university in a fun, accessible book and funding a scholarship with the book's proceeds. And it comes down to this: writing is power. It motivates, it inspires, it creates opportunity. Get really good at writing. You can help all kinds of people and improve the world and become somebody people remember. So with that, let's go back to Kiera Lewis for the second part of her interview with Dr. Delk.
And so Desmond, you're a scholar and you wrote the I Love My SSU children's book. And so let's start talking about your career in academia. So how is writing important for the ones who choose their career in the education or just academic field?
What's about contributing to, you know, the field, the body of work, and as a professor, as a scholar, where we're trying to solve issues or trying to find out ways to highlight effective practices, especially in teaching. So you can either publish, you know, research articles, opinion pieces, literature reviews. And so for, you know, ideally we want to help develop better teachers, help them understand and draw bridges and connections to students. So
right.
That's the purpose, really.
I guess it kind of goes into, you know, my next question about, you know, the type of writing that college professors do. I know you mentioned some. Was there any specific ones that you do personally?
I got a couple opinion pieces coming up that's in the works right now.
Okay.
And also, I'm trying to publish my dissertation. And my dissertation specifically was about how physical education teachers teach or what skills and techniques they use and what are their needs when it comes to teaching English language learners. So we want to kind of get that information. That body of work is really not there. We really don't know. There's not a lot of information about how to effectively teach students whose first language is not English.
Okay.
Therefore, trying to get that research publication out. And a couple opinion pieces kind of like focus, have HBCU focus with swimming as well as public relations and historically black colleges.
Sounds good. Yeah. Sounds good. That sounds exciting. So could you, what writing advice would you like to share with college students who are planning to follow a career path in the education field? You know, what should they be more aware of? Where can they find help? Things of that sort. So what type of advice would you give to them who are looking to go into the education field?
I see. So what to be aware of? Authentic sources. That's one thing. Yeah. You know, oftentimes people retweet or develop memes based upon false information. So it's important that we start fact-checking information. And also, you just got to consistently read. So you got to find out what field or what route within education you're interested in, whether it be like educational psychology, physical education, elementary education, whatever, and find those journals or those publications that which have that focus. Just kind of read those. You don't have to read them all the way. You know, just kind of on a consistent basis, see what's new, what's happening, what's developing in the field. So you have the research journals, and then you also have, like, the more practitioner-based, so what teachers are doing in the classroom. So I would say consistently check those out. Go to the library. Use the library.
Oh, yeah.
The librarian research scholars, they help out a lot, but often they're not really used. They're rarely used.
And that's a very, very good way for them to develop their skills, you know, develop their writing skills. And so I agree. The library is definitely a good way. So I appreciate your advice on that. And so we hope that our college students will take this advice. So let's talk about you as an author. What inspired you to write the I Love My SSU book? And did you always want to be a writer, or was it something else that led you to begin writing?
I guess I never imagined myself being especially published children's book author, so no, I never imagined that. But what kind of inspired me, I said it's like 1 million times, it's really just being, I went to Morehouse, so I was at homecoming one day, and the guy had a children's book about Morehouse, so I considered buying it, but I ended up buying it. Then I looked at it, and then it's a pretty solid book. It had the images of the college, and it's a pretty cool idea. I looked in the back of the book, and it had a list of all the books published by this company, and no, there were no other HBCUs. University of Georgia, Georgia Tech, the list goes on and on, but Morehouse was the only HBCU represented. So I was like, wow, what way can we inform our children or introduce them to HBCUs at an early age? I was going to try to fill the gap. We have Morehouse now, Savannah State, Howard University, and now coming soon, there's another HBCU in Louisiana, so y'all see it soon. I don't want to give away the person.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll be on the lookout for that one. And so when we read a book, we usually don't think about the depth of the writing process, you know, the time taken for the author to research, to write, to revise, to edit, you know, just going through that writing process, you know, and to revise it again and to finalize it. And so could you tell us about your writing process?
I guess when I was going through this process, I didn't even realize all that. You know, I thought it was going to be just real easy. But, you know, the main thing is, like, consistently put your ideas on paper.
Yeah.
And as ideas come up, you need to write them down, whether you use them, you know, recorded voice memos, write it down, text it to yourself, put it in the cloud somewhere, send yourself an email. But you have to consistently do that. With the revision process, it was, you just got to get it right. You know, if you're going to have a product, you want to kind of get it right until it's polished. So, and then also your research, right? So when trying to figure out, like, the way the book is set up, it's a children's book, but then it also has, like, fun facts about Savannah State. Right. So I want to know which facts are important to alumni, you know? What would they like to see in the book? And then so I found out a little bit of stuff that I never knew about Savannah State, you know, just asking questions. So, again, asking questions and then following that up with
looking for sources that actually answer those questions. You know, again, going back to check those facts.
Gotcha. Sounds good. And I like the fact that you said you didn't even realize that you were, you know, all of that you were going through. So it's something to look at, something to, you know, when you finally see the outcome, just like, yeah. You know, kind of look back like, man, this is what I did. So, yeah. So besides that complex process of writing a book, authors may need to take other actions in order to have their book in the hands of their audiences. So having others probably read it, publication process, things of that sort. So share with us your experience of publishing, distributing, and promoting your book. And so even to accomplish these actions, you know, requires an author to write other types of writing. So kind of expound on that aspect of your book.
Again, that's one of those things that I never thought of when I decided to write this book. But so the way Mascot Books, the company that I work with, it's kind of like hybrid. If you think about like self-publishing, like they really support or really help out. They have a branch where they do the shipping and they do the distribution, a little bit promotion. But you really have to promote yourself. You said what types of, you know, other writing?
Yeah.
You know, what's it called? Memos, yeah. Press releases, and everything like that. You have to be to the point. Very concise, and it has to be captivating as well. And so it's kind of hard to put in like maybe two sentences what you're trying to do, how you're trying to do it, and why people should actually buy in.
Right.
And that was kind of difficult for me. You know, ideally you want to just look at somebody else and say, hey, what did they do? But, you know, if you have some specific things or yours is a little unconventional per se, you're going to have to, you know, tweak it until you kind of get it right. And so that was a little bit difficult as well, you know, writing the press releases, how to just be concise and give the information to people. Because I can really elaborate. It's easy to just write big, you know, write for a long period of time or try to, you know, make sense out of something. If you can just keep rambling on and on and on, but just be straightforward and to the point. It takes a different type of writing. So
sounds good. You know,
and
sounds
why
good.
People should buy in and why people should buy into your product.
Did you have any other person kind of look over what you had written or...
I had a whole bunch of folks. I mean, I had just random people that I walked by on campus. People had been already invested into Savannah State, you know, faculty, alumni. And then with the illustrations, you know, I had, you know, friends look at it, hey, does this make sense or should we, you know, can you see that little small eraser mark? And it's like, yeah, we can. So, you know, again, you want to just make sure the product is polished. And
right.
So once you do that, everything will be okay.
Sounds good. So the purpose of our QEP Lunch and Learns is to pretty much bring in professionals from various backgrounds to talk about, you know, how writing plays a role within their profession. And so this allows students to see writing utilized in different arenas, not only just, you know, teaching and things of that sort. And so it's utilized within many career fields. And so hence showing important how having good writing skills, you know, is. And so could you, you know, the title of your presentation is Writing for Service, Using the Pen for Others. So could you please share with us how you can write for service and use the pen for others?
I guess at Langston, the university motto is like education for service. So, you know, ideally, we're here to educate people, to give them access to knowledge and utilize it to serve people. I guess you mean like, what does service mean? I don't know. I mean, it can be a little bit of everything, right? So when I talk about writing for service, my words or my products, how can I utilize that? What's specific for the book? How can I utilize the revenue for the book to assist others, right? And so when I was doing the children's book, one of my goals or the promises that I made to people was that, hey, a portion of this is going to go back to students directly, you know, so to help, you know, with scholarships.
Right.
So that's one way you can do it. So, you know, that's one aspect of it. Additionally, using the pen. And so, again, you can use your words to advocate and promote the ideas of others,
right.
fight for others, and charge people to do a little bit better. If you kind of think about the letter from the Birmingham jail with Martin Luther King, he was advocating for people who were always, you know, people who were fighting for the justice and really charging people who had these ideals, you know, the Christian values, the preachers and everything like that, to really stand tall on your values. If you say this is how we should live, then charge everybody else to live that way.
Right.
And expect that from everybody else as well. So you use your pen to fight for justice. You use your pen to, I mean, especially in the education field, introduce new techniques or dispel quote-unquote techniques that would be effective with certain groups of students.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's really it. I mean, that's just from my perspective. I'm not really, I'm definitely about service. And, you know, I mean, if you think back to my grandparents and great grandparents, I mean, you know, they were people of service in the public service field, mm-hmm. teachers and educators and everything like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, money's out there, you know, but at the end of the day, I guess you think about leaving legacies and making an indelible impact, then, I mean, you know, everybody be laying in the grave. You won't hear your eulogy, so you might as well do something decent while you're here
on earth. So. I agree. I definitely agree. This is really good. I really enjoyed, you know, your perspective of writing for service. So I definitely agree with that. And so the right attitude, you know, we have the mission to enhance student learning by improving attitudes about writing. And so what advice would you give to students to improve their attitudes towards writing? What would you have to say to them?
You got to just use time, right? So you got to make time. We got the same amount of hours in a day, right? So it's if you used to always been on social media, kicking it, hanging it out, not really focused on your work, just cut, like, start doing a lot, 15 minutes a day to something towards academia, right? So maybe writing, or within those 15 minutes, spend 2 to 3 to 5 minutes just writing something, right? Sometimes what I used to do, or maybe what I thought about doing, I don't know if I actually did it, was, you know, when I read different articles or, you know, like opinion pieces, I would, you know, write my rebuttal to it or my comment to it. Now, sometimes, I rarely, you know, actually submitted it because it wasn't necessary. But, you know, I would just practice that. And, of course, it helps you with your argumentative skills or, you know, fact-finding and being able to elaborate on ideas where people might have missed. So, or, I mean, even if you're Instagramming and tweeting and everything like that and you post things, you can really kind of elaborate on why you decided to put this picture there.
Right.
Or, you know, what this post meant to me. You know, we kind of, oftentimes people put out these quote unquote meaningful deep messages. We call them fake deep because they really think that they you know, they're digging, you know, making sense, but it's really not. But I mean, I'm encouraging people to use whatever mode of communication they use and just try their best to write and use regular American standard English, you know, so when writing, so you can just get used to it.
Yeah.
And once you do that, you won't make those small mistakes that people use and make on papers.
Right, and I like how you use, you know, social media. That's really big nowadays to pretty much appeal and relate to the students because that's what they're engaging in right now. And so they could definitely use those social outlets to pretty much expound on what they mean. You know, I definitely agree. You know, you want to kind of, a lot of times you want to meet students where they are or, you know, where they're headed. You know, technology is definitely expanding right now. And, you know, social media is definitely very, very heavy. Heavily used, so I agree. Just kind of appealing to the students and kind of relating to them, meeting them where they are. And so, kind of going off that question, did you always have a positive attitude when it came to writing? And, you know, how has writing helped you develop, you know, as a person?
It was always positive. I don't want to say it's negative, but I mean, I'd rather, you know, when I remember in fifth grade, what did I talk about today? We used to have writing assignments, right? You had to write papers or whatever. And I used to give the teacher a pencil to grade my papers. So I can just erase whatever mistake she wanted because I didn't feel like even writing that whole concept over again. I definitely didn't like the red ink because, I mean, I had to write the paper over again. So, writing, it's a definitely difficult thing. I mean, even to this day, I still will find something else to do as opposed to writing until I just kind of buckle down and sit down. And when it starts flowing, it starts flowing.
Right.
But you got to really keep practicing at it like any other skill. Any other sport, any other thing that you're trying to be better in, if you know a lot time to get it done, you'll get better at it. I mean, it takes time. It just doesn't happen automatically. So it's frustrating at times. Even the greatest writers, I mean, I'm pretty sure their attitudes at times are one of disdain for the whole writing process of trying to get those thoughts. You know, I wish people could just look in my head. Oftentimes, I always say, "You see what I'm saying?" Like, no, I don't hear, you're not clear what you're saying, nor did you write it down clearly, so I don't see what you're saying. But, you know, it's just something that you got to work on.
Right. I agree. And so, how is it, you know, I guess kind of talk about how it developed you as a person, you know, or if, you know, if it has, you know, in general.
Okay, I guess, like, that was one of the questions, too. I guess it got me a job, right? So I had to complete the dissertation to become, you know, to get the doctorate, therefore, you know, by me writing this piece of paper, this document, I was able to get a job. So it helps directly. But, I mean, just being concise with my ideas and, you know, as a teacher, you want to my ability to write. I'm not an English major, so there are some things that, you know, mechanics-wise that, you know, I will refer to, you know, my friends who you know, who are English majors or who, you know, have their PhDs in English to make sure things sound a little concise and flow and things of that nature. But you always have your resources. One, you need to know what your resources are and use those resources. But being able to correct my students' papers, which is very important, right, helping them think through their process, which, I mean, it's something that I enjoy doing, I guess, but I really want them to be sound in the arguments that they make, and that's what it's about. If you can clearly articulate your thought, then right. One, there's not, you minimize confusion, right? You minimize confusion. And then with the writing thing, it's just about, as a student, you need to align your writing towards the expectations of the faculty for right now. And so once you learn to do that, it's going to take time.
Of course.
If people utilize their time effectively, if people, like I say, if you're used to not writing hours at a time, when the teacher gives you like a four-page paper, a five-page paper, when you have to do cite articles and everything like that, it's a very daunting task. So, little by little, and everything really in moderation.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree. Timing is everything. Mm-hmm. And it does take time. I know just with hearing some students on campus now, you know, they tell me, you know, they have the same issues with clearly mm-hmm. expressing themselves on paper and things of that sort. Some people are confident in their mm-hmm. writing. So it's different scales. It's different levels of how people feel about writing. But I think you've provided some excellent advice for them. And, of course, you're experienced in it. So, you know, of course, you definitely know exactly what you're talking about. So are there any other thoughts that you would like to leave with us today?
There's probably always someone who knows something a little bit more in depth than you do, so it's probably would benefit you or behoove you to make sure you connect with that person. I guess oftentimes, for you know, you don't want to. All right, so if somebody's better than me, obviously I have some weaknesses as compared to that person. Sometimes the only way we're gonna get a little bit better. I mean, oftentimes we can kind of just stay with people who we can share our papers with, folks who are gonna give us the green light. Oh yeah, that sounds good. It's very hard to give your papers and, you know, give your writings to somebody who really is going to use that red mark. So the only way to really get better and improve your writing and to really get good feedback and really make that paper or that concept strong is to, you know, challenge yourself and be ready to be critiqued.
Right.
And I still don't like that myself, you know.
Yeah.
Even with faculty evaluations and we have to have peer evaluations, you know, you think you're doing everything right, but you really don't want that person coming off and say, hey, well, you probably do this a little bit better, that a little bit better. Or even with student evaluations, mm-hmm. you might think that you're doing everything perfectly or pretty straight to the point. Yeah. But the students let you know, hey, I'd rather you do this or slow down a little bit more. Can you go a little bit more in depth? And, I mean, it's not a good feeling at times, but, I mean, at the end of the day, what are you trying to be? Are you trying to get to the next level or are you trying to be where you are? And so that's really on you. So if you want to be at the next – if you want to stay at the same level, that's on you. But if you want to get to the next level, then – do what it takes.
Sounds good. Well, we thank you so much, Desmond, for this interview and, of course, for having you as our Lunch and Learn speaker.
That concludes another episode of The Writer's Way. Thank you for tuning in. We hope our two talented and accomplished guests have got you feeling motivated for writing. Now start moving that pen across the paper. Thanks to those who helped make this show possible, including Jason, Mr. E. the Motivator Etheridge, and Dr. Desmond Delk, as well as the QEP's very own LaKrista Nelson, Kiara Lewis, Adriana Oliveira, and Lisa Yon. Thanks to Dustin Michael for his help in production, and to Grace Curry at WHCJ for their support. Have a pleasant day, and tune in the next time for more episodes of The Writer's Way. I am Melvina Sykes. Thanks for listening, and keep writing. Don't forget that you can listen to all the Right Attitude Radio shows by visiting the Quality Enhancement Plan website, qep.savannahstate.edu. Also, please follow us on Facebook at RightSSU, Twitter at RightSSU, and Instagram at Right_SSU.